c'est dangereux, hein. Attention, hein.
Nothing to do with you or me. It is the story of a woman and a man on a Sunday morning in a city square crowded with people. I watched them from above, my hands resting on the railing of a balcony that faced other balconies across the courtyard and to my left and right. The balcony on which I stood held the parched remains of a pigeon. No one else watched from any other balcony. I did see one man in what looked like pajama trousers, shirtless, sleeve creased, briefly open his balcony doors, squint at the light, then reach out to pull the shutters in toward the dark. The courtyard contained many lush low palms. The sky held no clouds and was wide and deep and blue. The sun shone brightly but was not yet high enough to illuminate the shadows. There was the sound of birds and the breeze that disturbed the dry palm leaves. Suddenly, I was made aware of the commanding, pleading, and desperate voice of a woman directly in front and below. Her age and sex had been nearly obliterated by the obviously degenerate conditions of her existence for what must have been many years. She could have been 40 or she could have been 70. That she was a woman was evidenced almost entirely by some elusive quality in her voice. Its tenor and tone were not feminine, the pitch low and ragged, but something in it remained undeniably female. Her hair might have been once blonde, but was so thoroughly permeated with oil and grime. Its texture and color had been obscured. It hung in flat, broad strips nearly to her shoulders. Her face lacked any definite characteristics, except for the deep, dark mouth with its missing teeth. Although it was not cool, she was buttoned into a man's heavy dun-colored overcoat. It appeared to know her body. Beneath it, a dress of some sort, the hem stiff with mud hung down in back. On her feet were boots which she wore with dignity. Hands in her pockets, feet firmly placed, she strode and stood with decisive stature. The boots, undoubtedly her most precious possession, were complete and intact. Heels, toes, and laced.
Thank you.
The object of the woman's desire and rage was a man. He occupied a bench in front of her, his back toward me, obliquely. His large, lofty, regal head covered with loose brown curls rested in a drugged or drunken stupor on his chest. I judged from his appearance that he had been in this condition for some days, but not years. His hair had been trimmed not too distantly in the past, his beard growth no more than a week, the clothes, a light shirt, corduroy jacket, were fine-looking but soiled and crumpled. Between the dusty dark trouser cuff and the dull but solid shoe flashed a narrow band of pale skin. He would have been described as a young man. There appeared no gray in the brown abundance of his hair. His beard remained a dark shadow, his form straight and sturdy. He seemed unaware of his surroundings. The woman did not want it so. She punched him in the arm, tore at the sleeve of his jacket, shouted and cursed his immobile form. In trying to arouse him, she succeeded only in pushing him over, where he remained on his side. His hands slipped between his knees as his feet slowly found their way up onto the bench. she pulled again at the arm, lifeless, heavy. She tugged at his feet, trying to coax them back to the ground. She stooped by his head, caressed it, rubbed her face against his cheek. The eyes did not open, the body did not move. She became enraged, she wailed, shouted entreaties to the crowd. The anger in her voice rose, then fell to a whisper. She paced in a large, slow circle. Producing a bottle from her pocket, she choked it at the neck, twisted the cap, and drank deeply. Then, her eyes fastened on him, she moved with the bottle in his direction. Grabbing a handful of hair at the back of his neck, she twisted his head, hurled at it some plea or abuse, then let it drop. She patted the cheek, smiled, slapped him, shouted in his ear. Again, a handful of hair. She jerked his face up toward her and held it there. She stretched out her arm toward the bottle on the ground, snatched it up, and held it over him. She poured. Some of the red liquid entered his nose and mouth. The features contorted. She sputtered, coughed, and groaned. With great effort, he pulled himself up on one arm, the head trailing. Wasting none of it this time, she positioned the bottle over his mouth and poured the liquid straight down his throat. The choking grew violent. His foot slipped and tipped the bottle. She leapt to her feet. Her curses swarmed him. She pulled furiously, begging, soothing, demanding his attention. Thank you. spoke to him then long and low. His coughing continued, but without urgency. She placed her fist on the spot between his shoulders and pounded. Then, she opened her fist and began rubbing his back with the palm of her hand. She caressed first his shoulders and chest. Her hands found their way to the side of his head and shook it tenderly from side to side. Abruptly, she slapped him again. He responded by moving just perceptibly away. His arm rose defensively, then collapsed. She laughed, smiled at him. Whispering endearments, she sat quietly by his side with her arms around him. His head fell against his chest. She lifted it. His eyes seemed to open for an instant and recognize her. Combing his hair with her fingers, she continued soothing him with her voice. Then she held his face between her hands and covered it with kisses. She lingered on the mouth, a deep, soulful kiss. She continued holding his head up, his face toward her, gazing into his half-closed eyes. Hours later, I saw them leaning against each other on a different bench across the courtyard. It was afternoon and quite hot. Few people remained in the sun. I watched her stir. She tucked at the ball in her pocket, held it up, offering it to him. He made no motion to accept or reject. He continued sleeping. She brought the ball to her lips and filled her mouth and throat. She replaced the ball in her pocket, wiped her mouth on the back of her hands, and then, inclining her head just slightly, heaved the thin contents of her stomach into her lap. Adjusting his arm to her comfort, she placed her cheek against the fabric covering the shoulder of her sleeping friend and intertwined the fingers of his hand with her own. Thank you.
Thank you. When you look at a complicated mechanical device, you sometimes ask yourself if all the motion should be contained. And if you look at a enclosed and richly interconnected mechanical device, you sometimes are sure that the whole mechanism should be sitting in some kind of fluid.
Thank you.
There was one of the objects that was clearly dysfunctioning. Anyway, underneath the first layer of this mechanism was something quite a bit more, well, like a brain, like things, turning things, tendons, things pulling against each other, like pistons. Everything was connected to a kind of circular motion.